You're listening to KRXA 540 AM Radio Monterey. Today's show was pre-recorded. Welcome to Simple Life Radio. I'm your host, Cynthia Fernandez, and you're listening to Radio Monterey, either on your radio, maybe your car radio, or perhaps you're hearing us via live stream using TuneIn or live feed from the RadioMonterey.com website. Each week, we interview folks with a story, something that they've experienced and can offer perspective on for the rest of us, Simple Life. This week, our guest is local. She is an author and actually had to give up her professional work as an opera singer due to the debilitation of a disease called fibromyalgia. After she left the care of the medical profession to discover the cause and the cure of her chronic fibromyalgia syndrome, which is referred to as FMS, she recovered completely. Her contribution to others who suffer from this condition come in the form of her book, Curing Chronic Fibromyalgia. And I'm so happy that she's here with us in the studio to talk about her experiences today. Welcome, Valerie.
Thank you. I'm just thrilled to be here.
Wonderful. Well, it's so great to have you. And I just want to start, maybe you could help our listeners understand what fibromyalgia is.
I'd be happy to. It's the overexcitement and oversensitization of the central nervous system, which turns everything up in your body as far as your biological systems are concerned. Mm. It's like taking a radio and turning the volume up on high on static.
Wow.
And so what you have is everything in your body, all your biological symptoms are overexcited and overly
sensitive,
and they're processing it too high a level. Another alternative way to describe this is that your muscles don't relax either. It's called neuromuscular facilitation with the resting potential set too high. And resting potential is when you say you work out or something like that, and you have tension in your muscle, and then you go to relax that muscle and it doesn't relax because the resting potential is set too high. It doesn't come down to rest at a relaxed level.
Would that mean that there'd be problems sleeping?
Yes, it causes sleep deprivation, of course. All your muscles maintain a sense of tightness and constriction, which transforms more deeply into the body through the connective tissue. My back was so tight at one time that my back muscles were pulling my ribs out.
No
way! In the
back,
yeah, and I couldn't lie down in any position that would allow me to sleep.
Do people have trouble maybe being tempted with painkillers or something like that?
Yes, you become so racked with pain. It reminds me of the old Edgar Allan Poe line from Pit and the Pendulum. My body is racked with great waves of excruciating pain.
Mm.
You know, it's just so much like that. And you do become desperate. And all the medical profession can offer you is a Band-Aid over the oil light, which is painkillers.
Right. Okay, so now in your case, Valerie, when did you know that you had this, and what led up to the point when you received a diagnosis from the medical community?
Well, that's a great question, because most people don't receive one until they've gone through 15 doctors.
Oh, no.
And then they fall into the category of hypochondriasis as a doctor shopper.
Mm.
And then they're accused of having a psychological disorder, and that's the problem. But it's not a psychological cause. It's a physical cause. And right now, the medical profession is just on the ebb in a new era of understanding, and they're starting to recognize fibromyalgia as a real disorder. And it has been recognized by the World Health Association, but that was a long time ago, and our modern American Medical Society hasn't caught up. So they tend to think it's a disorder that women have. They become hysterical, and that it's in the female gene, and their hysteria causes a pain syndrome conversion, which, you know, their emotions become pain in the body, which that's a very outdated look at it. It's like when they used to bleed people when they had an infection.
Right.
You know, it's like the opposite of what was needed.
What needs to happen.
Right.
So I hate to say this, but I have to admit what comes to mind is, are there any women doctors in this profession?
Yeah, there is. I have a very nice woman doctor locally, and she's a naturopathic doctor.
Okay. So she doesn't share that perspective that it is a mental disorder.
No, and okay. She's read my book, too. Okay. So I've educated her in a way.
So what was your life like when you started to realize something was wrong?
Well, I knew it wasn't just a female disorder on a female chromosome. And I figured out, well, you know, scientific studies don't always connect the dots. They don't always agree. They take a primary symptom, which is the one that your body in your own individual self is triggered in fibromyalgia as the main problem, whether it be fatigue or pain or gastrointestinal problems that are disabling you, whatever is triggered as your miasm or your genetic weakness that manifests in fibromyalgia as a primary symptom, that's the specialist you go to see. And I finally figured out that it doesn't have anything to do with women. It's just the fact that common sense told me men have stronger necks than women do. They have stronger biological functions.
Right.
I mean, as far as their muscles
physical strength.
And so they're less likely to receive a brainstem injury from trauma to the neck or a dislocation of a neck vertebrae, especially the atlas, than women are.
Uh-huh.
And women carry heavy babies. They're doing lots of twisting and lifting. And
so in your case, had you had a car accident?
Yes.
I'm hearing you talk about, you know, stronger necks, and I'm mm-hmm. trying to imagine what your life was like. I know you were an opera singer.
Right, right.
Maybe you got tired over a long period of time or had headaches.
Well, what happened was 30 years before it was triggered by a minor incident, which, by the way, fibromyalgia is often triggered by a minor injury. And that's what makes it so innocuous, is why would a minor injury trigger all this pain? Well, it's because it's compounded over a whole lifetime of injuries. I had a car accident 30 years before I got my triggered injury, which is what I call the last straw injury.
Right.
And compounding over a period of years, I had symptoms mildly, but I was able to compensate for them with my youthful vigor and my strong will.
That's right.
But as you get older, you know, you get a little weaker, and those symptoms became louder. And then one day I was trying to further strengthen my diaphragm for a singing engagement, and I was doing crunches on the floor, and I pulled my atlas out even farther. When I was crunching from right to left, I pulled on my head, which is
right.
a no-no.
I know.
Pulled my atlas out further, and I heard this pop, and all of a sudden a sharp pain went down the right side of me, and I couldn't get up. And it just exacerbated itself from there, every movement, everything I did, because you have this bowling ball that's suddenly off-center on the top of your neck. And it pulls your whole body out of alignment, and your body scoliosis just turns into a big wave of misalignment.
Did the symptoms basically build up over a long period of time? I mean, did it progress to...
Yes, it does. It progresses over a long period of time. Exactly. It gets worse and worse as you try to keep going, and you mask it with drugs, painkillers. I was addicted to Vicodin, and the next step was injecting morphine or Percocet or whatever.
That's pretty serious.
It is. And I was falling down stairs and spraining my ankle from being a zombie and ending up in the hospital with sprained ankles. And it was really a horrible path to go. The painkillers don't kill pain. They take the edge off, and they make you a zombie. So you're not thinking about it as much, but you're just living in a nightmare, a purgatory.
Wow.
So
and so when you went to the doctor, you're realizing that this is progressing. The sprained ankles and the feeling like a zombie is just not going away.
Right.
And at some point you decided it could be something more.
That's right. I decided that this was no way to live. I think when I did fall down a flight of stairs in my stupor, and ended up with, air casts on my legs from the sprains,
wow.
I realized, you know, this is just getting worse and worse. And the spinal center I went to in Daly City, where Joe Montana supposedly had his back repaired.
Okay.
That was a nightmare. I was sitting in their nursing station waiting for a horrible test that could have disabled me further. And I saw this man in a wheelchair all slumped over, charming all the nurses, trying to charm them out of a little more pain medicine. And his eyes were drawn in big, dark circles. And I thought, this is hell, and this is not where I'm going to be. This is not my destiny. I said, I'm leaving this hell that the medical profession had guided me into.
Mm-hmm.
So I went home and threw away all my pain meds. And I didn't realize, no one told me Vicodin was addictive. So I was going through withdrawals worse than heroin withdrawals. Just, you know, my body felt like it was being put through a white-hot paper shredder.
So you did it cold turkey.
I did it cold turkey unknowingly. And so, this turkey was not very smart. So I went to my doctor in that shape, and he said, you can't do that. So he gave me something that was a substitute and weaned me off of it. And then I realized, the whole thing isn't working with the medical profession. I just left it. And I finally found a homeopath who put me on a constitutional remedy that got my energy balanced. And then I started finding my way through the labyrinth, I call it, of alternative medicine, and decided to use myself as a case study and developed a protocol.
Now, I'm going to back up just a little bit. I want to have a sense of you before this happened. Were you, before you were ill, were you generally a healthy person most of the time? Stayed really active and
yes.
busy?
Yes. When I was a child, I was in the Junior Olympics, and I ran faster than anybody. They passed me the baton, when I was running, and I was jumping my height on a scissor kip at five feet six.
Oh, my gosh.
And running broad jumping, I was doing 13 and a half feet. I was just this little creature that you couldn't stop and fearless, And then yeah. I went into, I was riding horses on Carmel Beach as I grew up because my grandfather had the stables behind the mission, And I had a very active athletic childhood, and I continued that athleticism through swimming and tennis, And then I had my business that I was running, and I was training my voice, and I just felt like all I needed to do in the morning was spin around in a circle and get my Wonder Woman suit on and go out the door,
Well, it sounds as though you were perfectly happy and didn't have any trouble with depression whatsoever.
No, I had my own business, and I traveled around the world. When I was single for 10 years, I made a world trip every year.
Wow.
And I saw every corner that I could possibly see, starting with Egypt.
Oh.
And third world countries, and going through Europe and the Caribbean and so forth. And I just was a life gobbler. And very, very kind of insanely optimistic, I don't know if it was courage or if it was just insanity, but, it kept me going.
Wow.
And I had a great life until this happened. And boom, it just came in like a thief in the night and stole my future.
Yeah, no pushing through it.
No.
So, Valerie, in your book, Curing Chronic Fibromyalgia, you talk about stress in its many forms.
Oh, yes.
And I'm wondering if you could share with us what you found the significance of stress to be in terms of its impact on our lives.
Oh, my God. In every way. Stress exacerbates every condition, even the common cold. And so to make the leap that stress causes fibromyalgia because you have a psychological disorder and you're not coping with your life well, that's really not true. The truth is that life stress exacerbates fibromyalgia because it lives in the central nervous system. Any stress, eustress, distress. If you get excited and happy, you get worse. If you get sad, disillusioned, or you have some sort of unresolved issue internally from the past, that makes it worse.
That's
almost like you can't
whammy.
Feel any heightened level of any kind of emotion, joy or sadness.
Encourage you to keep a flat line.
You have to cut. Yeah, you learn you don't cry. You stuff like crazy, and you just you can't really feel, one way or another.
Right.
And from a person who likes to feel a lot of joy and has a joyful nature, And I also felt equal sadness. I always feel that as much joy as you can feel, you're capable of feeling the same degree of sadness. It's a two-edged sword.
That's
so
true.
I was kind of a dynamically emotional person, but a mature one, though I handled very well.
You lived fully.
I lived fully,
so
but you had
I know
to control it.
We have a book in the bookstore, Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden in Carmel, titled Alkalize or Die, and I just want to reference it because I learned from that book that stress... Okay, so your diet really determines a lot about acidity versus alkalinity in your body, pH.
Right.
And stress acidifies. So you could be eating all the great leafy green vegetables and staying away from red meat and alcohol.
Oh, yeah, but if you're chronically mad at your mother, your gold ring's going to turn dark underneath there.
Because
that kind of thing.
Really
yeah.
changes your pH balance.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You can, or if you're just under too much pressure, gold rings used to turn dark underneath because the acidity.
No idea.
Oh, yeah, that's very true. You wear gold. I see that.
Yeah,
my goodness, you sure do. You're beautiful.
Oh, thank you. And so disease can't grow in an alkaline environment.
Hmm.
It feeds off acid.
Hmm. That's a good thought. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if we use that as sort of a way to sort of understand the framework of things.
Because something is out of order and you just don't have your head screwed on straight.
Okay.
And that's not psychological. That's literal. Your atlas is misaligned at the top of your neck.
And the atlas is the last bone in your backbone.
It's the very top of your neck where your skull sits on your spine.
Okay.
And it is a very unusual in its configuration. And it's the only one that doesn't have a disc between itself and the skull. There's no disc. It's a direct contact. The skull sits right in a groove on top of the atlas with these arms out to the side to hold your skull straight.
Uh-huh.
And that's why they call it the atlas, holding up the
world. Oh, holding up the world.
Right, yeah. So what happens is that atlas gets twisted or subluxated off-center to the left, and then you're just pinching your spine. It's called the kink subluxation.
Uh-huh.
And that's what pinches your spine, where the brainstem comes through from your brain down through the atlas into the C1 and 2 and down throughout your spinal cord and becomes the spine.
Okay.
And when that is pinched, you have a terrible pressure on both the brainstem and the meninges that completely go around the from the top of the spine down to the bottom to the tip where you sit and all the way back up the other side. The meninges are the fibrous tissue that hold in the cerebral spinal fluid and keep the spinal cord nice and wet and fluid and safe.
Uh-huh.
And then the great grand nerve trunks come in to your spinal cord through the meninges between the discs, between the vertebrae. So when you have a kink subluxation at the top, one side of the meninges is being pulled and the other is being pushed. And so this pulling, and because the meninges are not flexible, it pulls, and it actually pulls on the grand nerve trunks and causes them to overfire. So you've got the overfiring of the grand nerve trunks that are coming in through the meninges, and you have the excitation of the central nervous system in general from the brainstem injury. And the brainstem injury distorts all the signals that come from the hypothalamus in the back of the brain that control and regulate all of your life force biological systems. And when those signals are distorted, that's when your central nervous system is turned up on high, like a radio turned all the way up to high and being on static.
And having no relief from that.
No relief. You have a constant 24/7 fight or flight syndrome, which, as you know, if you experience that just temporarily is horrible.
Yeah. Whoa. That is amazing. Well, thank you for describing that. And so it sounds, Valerie, like chiropractic is a definite aspect of treatment that you've benefited from.
Yes, and specifically upper cervical chiropractic.
Which is different,
okay. Because not all chiropractors can adjust the atlas. Now, I would suggest finding an upper cervical chiropractor through NUCA, the National Upper Cervical Chiropractic Association, or another chiropractor that you know specializes in the cervical spine, the neck and the upper neck, which is the atlas.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not recommend a manual adjustment. I would recommend the side posture head drop table developed by B.J. Palmer for adjusting the atlas, and he's the father of chiropractic.
Mm-hmm.
And B.J. Palmer School of Medicine is where a lot of chiropractors go and get their degrees, and they are trained there for upper cervical care.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to make sure it's an upper cervical chiropractor.
Okay.
And get that atlas aligned, and then the subsequent result of the atlas misalignment is further subluxations throughout your spine in coping with that atlas misalignment. So you need a full alignment done.
Well, this is fascinating, and I have utmost respect and admiration for the kind of work you have invested in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so grateful that you're willing to share what you know with all of our listeners today, and certainly with the readers of your book, Curing Chronic Fibromyalgia. Now, we're going to take a break in a few minutes, but before we do, I want to just mention, if you're just joining us and you've missed any part of this broadcast, archives from today's show will be available as a podcast. So you can find it on Pilgrim's Way website, which is pilgrimsway.com, or podbean.com. That's a podcast website. If you go to podbean.com, just type in the search bar, Simple Life Radio, one word. Our guest today is Valerie Lumley, local author of a book that not only describes her experiences with fibromyalgia, it also has a protocol that she's discovered brings a cure. Her book, again, is titled Curing Chronic Fibromyalgia. She will be at Pilgrim's Way Bookstore March 22nd, that's a Saturday, 1 to 3 in the afternoon to meet people, have conversation, and of course, sign books. So we're going to go ahead and take that break now, but when we come back, we have more with Valerie Lumley on Simple Life. Stay with us. Thanks for staying with us. We are in studio here at Radio Monterey with local author, opera singer, and recovered fibromyalgia victim. Her book is titled Curing Chronic Fibromyalgia, Choosing What Works. And we were talking before the break about stress and also the impact on the body when there's a misalignment with the atlas, the very top of the cervical spine. And I was just wondering, Valerie, if you could share with us what treatments you have found. Now, you shared that you decided at some point in time to move away from the more allopathic community of medical industry. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you're sitting here, and I got a little sample of your singing before we started taping. So I know you're fine. You're very fine.
Very strong.
Yeah,
yes.
Very strong. What did you find works for you within the alternative medicine arena?
Great. That's a wonderful question. I'm so glad you asked it. And I'm very happy to share my protocol for a lasting cure that is maintainable and real. That's what I say.
That's what we need.
That's what it is. And a lot of people say, oh, God, cure. You know, that's not something you put with chronic illness, especially not fibromyalgia. You know, I'm peddling false hope, and maybe I didn't even have fibromyalgia, because if I did, I couldn't possibly be cured. And, you know, the failed hope and the skepticism is something that I have to deal with in trying to advance a cure for this. And I really try to tell people to look at fibromyalgia as curable and look at it in a new light, kind of like looking through it at a full moon as a profile instead of a face.
Mm.
It takes a little while to see it, but once you do, that's what you see.
That's right.
And you have to visualize that for your future. You have to visualize yourself as a whole human being again. In fact, even better than ever. I feel that I'm a better human being now than I could possibly have been without fibromyalgia in my life. Not just because I'm more compassionate, because I always cried when I saw a little dead animal on the side of the road, you know, and that kind of thing when I was a kid. But just because understanding myself and my history, especially throughout my dysfunctional family, which we all have some degree of that, we all have our version, you know, it helps understanding myself taught me to learn to understand others. And the stress of not understanding your family and being locked in a system of dysfunction is very detrimental to fibromyalgia, because dysfunctional families are very stressful. I have three psychologically focused chapters right at the beginning of the book that really describe understanding dysfunction, how to set boundaries, the value of boundaries. And I knew a lady once that could say no as easily as she could say yes, and she was so polite you didn't even know that you were being shut down, you know. And afterwards she'd offer you a cup of tea and everything was fine.
That's,
you know,
a talent.
That is where we need to get.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was a great role model. So I just, you know, it's the boundaries are outlined in there as to their value. And then authentic forgiveness.
Mm.
And forgiveness is something for the heart of the forgiver. It doesn't necessarily take the offender off the hook. It just simply says that, okay, I've invested my life savings in this guy who stole my life savings and ran off to Europe. And now he's back. But, you know, I forgive him, but I'll never invest my life savings with him again.
Mm.
You know, it's something that you do to cleanse the heart of the forgiver. And that's something that's kind to yourself. If you maintain a grudge or an angst against a wrong that had been done to you, it's like taking poison and waiting for the other person to die.
Ooh.
It doesn't make sense.
Right.
So you have to learn to love and be kind to yourself. And then that translates in really being able to live in what I call detached loving forgiveness of others. And detachment is something I teach in my book as a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional detachment frees you from the game that others are playing and the power they have over you due to their own misguided way of being. And I try not to be judgmental, just factual about how to assess for health and safety those around you. It's not judging. Judging is I'm better than you are, and my big ego says, you know, says so.
And or you're wrong, and I'm
or
right.
You're wrong, and I'm right. It's not about being right. It's about, you know, this doesn't work for me. This isn't the way I am.
Right.
This is hurting me. It's making, you know, it's not my fault, and it's not my responsibility to adapt to you. Mm. It's my responsibility to own who I am and then protect that being with all the love and strength of a lioness, you know, for her cubs.
And so this was the first sort of layer that you went through.
It was a big shift.
Yeah.
Right. So after educating myself and reading over 40 books on human psychology and going through 2 years of therapy, which my therapist was great. She just said, okay, here's the books you read. Come back when you've read them. And once a month I'd go back and she'd give me work to do. And I had assignments. And it's like, the goal is getting off the boat when you get to the shore, not staying on it and staying leaning on the therapist
right.
for the rest of your life. You take responsibility, and that's a big part of this. And so after I resolved and understood my past, then I could move past that and go into where what's going on psychologically with the medical community. Why are they laying this big guilt trip on me that I'm creating all this because I'm a mess? Well, you know, anybody that lives with fibromyalgia is going to be a mess. They're going to be crazy insane with pain. They can't respond or even react in any normal way because everything hurts. Sound, light, even an attack, a psychological attack, you know, or someone saying, you know, you can't possibly be in this much pain or this is, or it's your fault, those kinds of things. So I had to go in and realize that in the ignorance of the medical profession, they abuse you terribly with this illness. They throw drugs at you that I was saying earlier, get you dependent on, that don't do no good over time. They actually make you worse because as if you put a Band-Aid over an oil light and continue to drive your car.
Yeah,
you're not going to see it, but your car is going to eventually explode. Curing an illness is not an event; it's a process. And so people want instant cures, instant relief, and it's just something that you have to dedicate your life. I can't guarantee everybody with this illness will get well, but I can guarantee they can get their life back and they can get better. Getting well depends on the individual, what kind of patient you are, because there are basically three types of patients. One of them doesn't really want to get all the way well because they're enjoying the secondary gain, the added attention, less responsibility, whatever they perceive as a secondary gain. The second kind doesn't want to think about it, doesn't want to take charge, doesn't want to know. They just want to take the medicine and hope it doesn't taste too bad.
Mm-hmm.
And the third type is me, moi, the kind that wants to take charge and educate themselves and become an expert on their condition and use themselves as a case study and choose what works.
Well, you know, listening to you, Valerie, I mean, it's obvious you have reclaimed your life and your health and what you do in the world while you're here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about your comment earlier in terms of the Atlas being misaligned and really what you're talking about in terms of alternative ways of healing that you've discovered works for you is aligning yourself with things that support your well-being.
Yes, that's why my protocol begins with the Atlas subluxation. I recommend a constitutional homeopath, not an acute care homeopath. The constitutional homeopath is a classical homeopath that gives you a constitutional remedy. That what the constitutional remedy does is it treats your whole body, not just, you know, a bruise or a cold like acute care homeopathic remedies do. And it it spurs your body on to heal itself in specific ways, whatever is going wrong. It gives you the energy that your system is lacking because fibromyalgia puts you into energy deficit. You know, you can imagine running out of energy and going into energy bankruptcy because your whole body is overly excited and all your systems are on high. Your body is burning up more energy than it can produce in the cell matrices. What homeopathic does is neutralizes that over amperage. And it's really interesting. The part of the brain that receives pain signals actually grows new receptors to receive the amount of pain signals it's being bombarded with because it just can't receive. It just becomes like a spaghetti bowl of pain receptors. And what you have to do is shrink those down by toning down the pain signals. And I used to get so many pain signals that I couldn't even form sentences to talk.
Mm.
And a doctor would say, well, from 1 to 10, where is your pain? And I'd say, oh, 50. You know, you don't have a scale that measures this much pain.
Right.
It's not possible.
Well, now that brings me to another question. Mm-hmm. How long, I'm sure you know the answer, how long has this particular illness been labeled? How long has it been in existence, in other words?
It's always been in existence.
So back in the 1800s, they had this, or did they call it something else?
There was a civil war, a skeleton that is in the chiropractic museum of a man with a subluxated atlas coming out of war injuries who had his entire spine scoliosis. The head was over to the side, tilted and turned like it is with the atlas subluxation. And bone spurs had grown completely through his neck, so he wouldn't subluxate any farther. A complete atlas subluxation would be like an internal decapitation.
Hmm.
And if my atlas was out a half a thumb to the left and another few centimeters, and I would have been like Christopher Reeves.
Mm.
It would have been devastating. I never would have been able to come back because it would actually have been cut by the edge of the inside of the atlas.
Mm-hmm.
This mid-century, the World Health Organization started claiming that this was a disorder. This was a real illness. They didn't call it fibromyalgia at the time. They had different ways of calling it, but they did start recognizing it as a real disorder. And it's only recently, you know, that there's foundations. And as you can see, the World Health Organization was not the first one to come of age of this. There's the official magazine of the World Institute of Pain called Pain Pathways that talks about fibromyalgia.
Right on the front cover.
And I'm in there 8 pages in, you know, on this edition. And also another journal was an International Journal of Anesthesia, Pain and Management and Intensive Care through Islamabad, Pakistan. It's an international pain journal, and they have an entire article on me in the back about fibromyalgia, and they discuss it in their journal. And so these journals and magazines, not just because of me, but more and more so, starting to publish about it and make it known as a real disorder, illness.
Now, I'm under the impression that a number of cases attributed to fibromyalgia have grown exponentially.
Oh, yes. There's millions and millions around the world, as you can imagine. There's over 10 million in our country alone of reported cases. Those have been identified and reported.
Right.
You can just probably safely double that with the unreported and misdiagnosed cases, because when a patient has a primary symptom, they go to the specialist for that symptom. That specialist puts on a pair of glasses that just only see that illness through the lens of their specialty.
Right.
And they try to fit you into a box and treat you through that specialty. They don't realize that this is simply a symptom of a broader problem.
Mm-hmm. So they don't really glimpse the full scope.
They don't glimpse the full scope. Uh-huh. They just, whoever has a primary symptom picks the specialist in that field and goes to that person. And then they get into the medical system. They become a system patient. And sometimes I call the medical profession like a cult for some people, because they get drawn in and they get mesmerized and they hand all their power over to whoever's advising them.
Mm.
And that's the big mistake, is handing the power over.
Well, it can be a really scary thing to have the awareness that your health is in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us aren't trained in the health field.
I was a medical insurance processor for an ophthalmologist, an eye surgeon locally. And then I started my own business as a medical insurance billing service, and was written up in the Herald 35 years ago as the creator of the field. And I started medical insurance billing service for private individuals and became their advocates with the insurance companies. And I didn't only learn from my education as a CMA, certified medical assistant, about ophthalmology. Through my clientele, I had at one point over 480 clients locally, and over the years helped thousands and thousands of mostly elderly people with Medicare and supplements, and learned all about the different ways that we end up at that age. One of the later symptoms is just completely disabled arterial sclerosis and bone disorders and things like that.
Well, I want to spend some time with that wheel, and also your protocol. I know it's really well laid out in your book, but we can pick that up a little bit when we come back from this next break. So stay with us. You're listening to Cynthia Fernandez, your host on Simple Life Radio. And our guest today, Valerie Lumley, is the local author of a book titled Curing Chronic Fibromyalgia, Choosing What Works. And we're going to take a short break, so stay with us. We'll be right back with more on Simple Life. Before we get back with our conversation with Valerie Lumley, there's just a couple things I wanted to share with you. If you want to know what events we're having in the store, local author book signings or traveling author book signings or any kind of current events going on through Pilgrim's Way, events are best found off of our website, pilgrimsway.com, and just click on the events page. And there's a lot of information there, a lot of photos. If you want to receive an email announcement of future events, there is a place at the bottom of the page on the website for you to just fill in whatever email address you want it to go to. We don't sell or share those email addresses and your name, and that gets set up automatically. Also want to mention to everyone, if you haven't already heard or taken advantage of it, Pilgrim's Way has been offering a birthday sale. So that means that the birthstone of each month that we sell in the store is 40% off for that month. And some really happy people have come in and either gotten their own birthday present or found something for a loved one. So I don't want you to miss out. Keep that in mind. Give us a call if you need to, 831-624-4955, or check out the website pilgrimsway.com. We're back in studio with local author Valerie Lumley and opera singer extraordinaire. And we're talking about a very important illness that has a way of being cured. Valerie has been able to do her own research and apply protocol with support of alternative medicine and therapies in that field, and is actually strong enough to begin singing professionally again. Is that right, Valerie?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have a new concert series I'm promoting, Viva Yay! La Diva, Ooh! Keeping the songs alive.
I love it. So I wanted to share with our listeners some of what you have found that works for you and that works for this illness, fibromyalgia.
My protocol is clearly delineated in my book and how to reach the proper people. And encouraging you to understand that this is not your karma. This is not
punishment
for unfinished business from another life. We can kind of create our own karma. And we also share the karma of other people that they're creating for themselves, which is why I stress boundaries. So I've created plenty of my own negative karma in my life. I admit fully to that. I'm certainly far from perfect, which I'm kind of delight in.
Good for you.
In a way, our eccentricities and our differences, you know, we have to be human. But at the same time, I don't want to do any harm. And I finally realized I can't let other people do any harm to me. And we're not here to present ourselves on the altar as a sacrificial lamb to other people's disorders and problems. We have to hold ourselves in high enough esteem to put ourselves first. So there's no shame in that. And you can do this separation from toxic people with love and compassion, living in loving detachment, I call it, and understanding, coming to understand yourself and them. And what's, you know, you understand, well, they're on a misguided path because of, for reasons that we don't know or reasons that we really do know if we grew up with them. You can understand that. And that's freeing. And you also have to look at alternative therapy as legitimate. There's so many legitimate proven therapies out there, like a brilliant Dr. Hahnemann 200 years ago from Europe developed homeopathy, and our own medical system adopted it. It's like treats like. It's when you get your vaccination, you get a little bit of the thing that you're vaccinating against.
Right, right.
You're boosting your body to defend against that.
Successfully,
and
yeah.
They use that like versus like treats like theory in homeopathic medicine in some ways, but they kind of deny it in others, unfortunately.
And I know that in the United States, alternative medicines are not as widely accepted and encouraged as in other countries.
Well,
has that been your...
that's true. As the AMA gains power, the medical association becomes in the grip of their influence, the insurance companies influence what they will cover, what they won't cover. The drug companies influence the medical profession, what they push. They actually pay doctors to put their drug in a positive light, and they bring them lobster lunches to push the drug and mm-hmm. give them samples in their offices.
And your journey... finding out that you had this illness.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously you committed yourself to investing in the recovery of that.
Yes.
You mentioned patience being required. How long did it take you to, once you began basically reclaiming your own health and well-being, how long did it take you to
right.
get
well,
to...
Right. Well, once I tested and formulated my protocol for a lasting cure, it took about 4 years for me to get to where I can say, you know, I'm really well again. I'm just not quite as strong as I used to be.
But you're getting stronger.
Now I'm as strong as I used to be. And
right.
I'm getting, and actually in some ways I'm better than I've ever been.
Right.
I turned 62 on Saturday.
Oh, congratulations.
And my friends tell me I look 10 years younger.
Oh.
So that's really nice. And it's a nice place to be.
So for all of those listeners out there, if this resonates with you, or perhaps you have a friend or family member who has this kind of experience, Valerie Lumley is our guest today, and she is the author of a book titled Curing Chronic Fibromyalgia, Choosing What Works.
That just gave me a thought. A lot of people say to me, well, I must not have had fibromyalgia because their illness wasn't triggered by a car accident, or they didn't injure their neck that in a notable way. But there are so many ways to traumatize the neck and spine and create a brainstem injury through a misplaced atlas. For men, it is more difficult because they're stronger, as we talked about. But for women, they need to be careful, because just compounding injuries over a lifetime of carrying babies that got too heavy or a lifting, twisting accident, carrying a heavy child and turning around and trying to multitask and do something. All your lifting muscles between your shoulder blades and your back are connected up in the top of your spine where your atlas sits. And you can pull your atlas out in hundreds of different ways. A chronic poor posture, a bad golf swing, you know, like I say, a lifting injury, falling down and bumping your head, you know, or somebody, I don't know, there are a lot of battered women out there.
That's right.
You know, that have to consider
and
the
some
long
men
term.
Too.
And right, yeah. And some men too.
So Valerie Lumley
different ways.
Mm-hmm. will be at Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden on March 22nd. That is a Saturday, and she'll be there from 1 to 3. Come on by and have a conversation with her. Perhaps you have a question or two. Certainly take a look at her book. It is a wealth of information. And Valerie, I'm so glad to have the time with you today. I wish we had more time. You have so much to share. I do have some last final questions for you.
Bring it on.
Well, in honor of how powerful we are in terms of our intention and our vision and how that connects with everything else around us, I would love to know from you what you see, what you envision for our future.
Well, I look at mankind in their evolution as I do one single person. And I think we've gone through our terrible twos with our Spanish Inquisition and all those things and the Crusades. And I think that we're probably just about leaving our teens. And I think eventually we're going to grow up and become adults. And it's not just that women need to take the positions of the politicians, because we're nurturers and, you know, you're behind every big man, they say, is a big supportive woman. I say behind every big man is a big behind, but that's just me. But it's just a matter of evolving ourselves and putting what we have as evolving spirits out into the world and creating that nice, lovely Buddhist ripple effect that can take place. So I have a very positive vision of our species. I think we've been in trouble. We're not as in much trouble anymore. We're not going to the punishing closet as much as we used to, but we're certainly have to be watched, and we have to be our own watchers. So I have a feeling that we have great things and a magnificent future ahead of us.
Wow. That's beautiful to hear. I love it. And since we are co-sponsored by Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore, I love to find out from people, what was your favorite book of all time?
Well, this may sound kind of simplistic and a little infantile, but I really love Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Oh, that's such a great story.
Because it's uplifting, and it's a metaphor for us all. And it's a simple and great story, but it's, you know, owning who we are and being that, no matter what influences are around. I had to stand up to roomfuls of people and quote Robin Williams in The Awakening when he said, "If you're right, I would agree with you." And I've had to do that numerous times.
Wow.
But I've had no fear in doing that. I could be alone in a whole room full of people and be the only one standing in my position. But mm-hmm. you have to stand in your own position, know your own truth, and not abandon that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think Jonathan says that.
Yeah. And so what are you reading now?
Well, this is a departure from Jonathan. It's a book by, we probably remember the actor Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Marcia Davenport was his sister, and she lived down the coast. And when I had the billing service, she was a client of mine. And she wrote some brilliant books, and one of them was based in Europe about Mozart. And since Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart is my favorite composer, I've named my African gray parrot after Mozart. He calls himself Mosey or Mosey Mo, and he can say Mozart with a Z pronounced properly. I'm reading her book about Mozart, the life and times and chronicles of Mozart through Vienna and all the places where he followed the money, followed the aristocracy, and wrote his plays and his operas. And it's fabulous. You can actually hear the cobblestones as you walk down the street under your feet when you read this book and hear the little horse and buggies go by. I was just in Vienna, in fact, last April, May, with my voice teacher. We went over there, and as a reward for all my hard work and revitalizing his life over the last 2 years as well after his wife died, he's wonderful and in great enough shape now. Till we went on a cruise from Vienna to Budapest, back to Vienna, on the river cruise on the Danube River.
Wow.
And it wasn't the Viking that you see on Masterpiece Theater. They're three times as much as the one we took, but it was just as great. And it was a French-owned company. We had French food and every day, three times a day, and it was very nice. So,
well,
yeah, so that goes from the Mozart book. I was actually hearing the horse and buggies on the cobblestone streets over there. So.
Well, it so suits you, being so passionate about voice and music and sound
You have to go to Vienna, of course. I'd never been there.
Well, we're going to run out of time here.
Okay.
I just know it. But
thank
you once again for being willing to share your story with all of our listeners on Simple Life.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure, and it's my mission to spread the word of hope, real hope.
So for all of you listening, again, Valerie Lumley, local author, will be at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden on Saturday, March 22nd. Mark your calendars, 1 to 3 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Come on by and say hello. Let her know that you heard her on her interview. Certainly, if you have questions, that would be a perfect time to take advantage of her experience and take a look at her book. I think you're going to like it. So we'll look forward to seeing you there and appreciate you listening today. Take good care and keep it simple. Until next week, bye for now.